agenda is there. Marcus is scribing today. Thank you, Marcus. Today on the agenda, we are going to just quickly re-review the items that need to be closed on the syntax document. We're going to review all of the last call and post-last call 2 issues in the RDF working group tracker, which we should have addressed all of those, but just to make sure we've got them, we'll review them on the call today, and then candidate rec prep, just discussing what we need to do to get the documents into candidate rec. Any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else that we should discuss today?
I was under the impression that Vikash would be joining us and giving us a brief update, but he's not here yet, maybe. He said he's just going to be present through IRC.
Yeah, he said that his SIP connection is not doing that well for whatever reason. I guess we can have Vikash do his update first thing. Any other updates or changes to the agenda? Okay, I saw update.
We could briefly talk about those two pull requests from David Booth, if we want to merge them.
Sure, okay. Updates from... So these are updates to syntax. David Booth. Do you have a link to those pull requests, Marcus?
Yeah, just a second. This one here is for the API spec. And
the changes for the API were just editorial changes from converting to using serializing and deserializing.
Right, and more or less the same changes were just reflected to the syntax spec as well.
Yeah, so
only
it seems
thing
like...
was that discussion about non-standard.
But David Booth agreed to the changes that Dave Longley proposed?
Yes. Yeah, that's the language that's in there. It says, note that a generalized RDF data set is an extension of RDF. It does not conform to the RDF standard.
I don't see that change.
Yeah, I've got a link to where that is, or I can get one, maybe.
You mean
it'll let me.
The non-standard thing? It's this comment here.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that text. I think I mentioned that on the pull request. I don't see that commit in the pull request, though.
It's in the pull request 288.
Oh, 88. Okay.
One.
I'm looking at the wrong one.
Yeah, it's in the syntax file.
It's in the large.
Do we have that
in the middle?
We have similar language in both the syntax and the API specs.
No, that list wasn't duplicated in the API spec. I don't think we should duplicate the same text in both specs.
Well, as I recall, Dave thought that we should say it in both specs. I thought, doing a syntax spec is sufficient, but.
Let's wait for him.
Whether it would be okay to just include it in the syntax spec, and he said that would be okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's great then.
Okay. And the changes look good to me. I've just looked over all of them in the pull request, and so yeah. I mean, why don't we just go ahead and pull that stuff in? Are there any objections to pulling it in? On any of any of the changes? Okay. All right. So we'll pull both of them. Marcus, are you going to take care of doing the pull?
Sure.
Great. Thanks. Okay. Let's see. This is Vikash. It's 10:10. Vikash is ready. If not, we'll just do the review of the JSON-LD GitHub issues.
Sounded like he was having bandwidth issues.
Yeah, but he's not going to be able to join us. He's just going to paste his update on IRC. But he wanted some time to update the... oh, there we go.
Here we go.
How should I convert to JSON-LD? I guess he doesn't know that there's a JSON-LD.js library.
It sounds more like he wants to convert JSON to JSON-LD, which is just a matter of adding the context.
Yeah.
Sounds like maybe there's some further misunderstanding there.
I think he wants to know how to convert, to how to create a context. Is there a library to write out a context? Is that... So he has, well, I don't know.
Okay, well, let's take this offline because it's going to be pretty difficult to discuss this via IRC. All right. Next up. Reviewing the JSON-LD GitHub issues that are ready to be closed. That is here. There are really only four issues left. I think the spec text for the context array feature is done. I don't think we're waiting on anything for that. Dave Lane, do you... know if we're waiting for anything? Oh, actually, you know what? I'm confusing this with another issue. Marcus, you say that we allow an object with app context to be passed in, and we've done so since the very beginning.
Yeah.
Okay, and all the other implementations do that? Do we have a test for that?
So.
If you're passed in a link, it must be an object having a context. That's what mine does.
Passed a link.
It depends how you implement the test suite, because the context files, all those objects are objects having an add context key, but it depends whether you just pass a link to the API or whether you parse that and then pass in the parsed document.
Hmm.
But I would find it...
go ahead, sorry.
I would find it very surprising if that wouldn't be supported, because, I mean, you can parse a document and use that as a method parameter in the API, so why shouldn't you be able to do the same?
Yeah, I'm not making an argument against it. I didn't understand that we supported that. And do we also support when you pass in something without a context? We just assume that that's the context itself, or is it required that it have that context in there?
Well, in my implementation, I haven't supported that till now, but I've seen that they've had that in his implementation, I think, for quite a while, or even from the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think mine has always supported both.
My implementation doesn't support it. Mine only supports an object having a context. Although, if we have, I'm not sure. I don't think the spec text was clear, perhaps, at the time.
Yeah, so I guess that's the thing. That's the only reason I didn't want to close this issue, is that it seemed like we were still not quite clear on what we support. Is the spec text clear now, or?
The question is whether we want to allow to pass in arrays directly as well.
I see. Yeah, so the mine, if I am passed a URI, then I turn it into a file handle. If I'm passed a file handle, I expect that it be something I can deserialize to a JSON object having a context. If I'm passed in an object, I expect that it is just the context. Similarly, if I'm passed an array, I expect it's an array of contexts.
Yeah,
so
that seems to me like
what mine does.
Yeah, mine does something very similar to that, but if there is no context property, it looks for one. And first, it looks to see if there is one. If it is one, it uses that. If there is no context property, it assumes that it is the actual context object.
Right.
And
yeah.
Does the same behavior for arrays.
Yep. So that, to me, seems like the right behavior. Marcus, you're saying that we might not want to support that?
We can support that. The only danger, then, is that you are going to interpret a document which isn't intended to be a context as a context.
Yeah, and then you would the thing would probably blow up on you at that point, right?
Not necessarily.
Well, right, not necessarily, but in the average case, it's going to blow up on you.
It would produce invalid data, so it would expand to invalid IRIs, for example.
I think we should code for I think the more likely case is people might just pass in things that don't have the context property and they intend it to be the context, and the less likely case, you know, the 5% case or maybe less than that is someone's making a mistake and passing the wrong thing in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I think we should just support the more likely and, useful case. And if you're messing it up.
I think, though, in the case that you're passing it, that you're using a string and a reference, which is a HTTP link, say, we do say that a context must be a valid JSON-LD document. And if it does not contain a context, it's not a valid JSON-LD document. And that's why we open the document, parse it as JSON, and extract the context.
Well, I mean, you can make that check you can be going through a different code path to deal with if a string is passed before you hand it off to the next thing that handles it. So
mm-hmm.
we can still enforce that and have the behavior of supporting things that have the context key and things that don't.
So the issue is if you were passing in an object, do you look for a context there and dereference it if you found an object? So in my case that would be just be moving some code from the after file open to the found object portion.
Right. Yeah, I think if you pass in an object that has a context and that context is a string, is that the question? Then you look that up?
No, if I pass an object to my context processing, I presume that it does not contain a context, that it is a context.
No, you always check to see if add context exists inside that object, and if it does, you use that.
It depends on where if I'm in expand, certainly I always look to see if there's a context and I use it. If there is, then I have a context class to which I've passed that object. And at that point, that expects that it is the content of that context. From what I gather, we're suggesting that that code might be passed an object that contains a context itself. So,
right, you're reusing your code and it's going to be maybe strange in some other places during expansion, is what you're saying.
Perhaps.
Right.
I think I could be perhaps more flexible from an API perspective by just removing that constraint. So I think that's if that's what we agree upon, that's what I'll do. I'm just wondering, what do we need to say Or do we need to add tests for that purpose?
Well, we should definitely add tests.
It would be great to add tests, but we need to create API tests for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I guess that just gets into another process about how do we, you know, what's the plans for the test suite to be able to do more API testing?
Okay, so let's kind of rewind here. What exactly do we want to support passing in objects that don't have an app context entry key? I think we should. I think Greg has already implemented and Dave Longley has already implemented that, or something close to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Marcus, you're saying there's no strong objection from you for supporting that. We just have to be very clear about that possibility in the spec.
Yeah, I could live with it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and just support that, since there doesn't seem to be any strong objection to it. And then as we're cleaning up the spec text and the implementations, if something pops out as problematic, we can revisit the decision. So the proposal is support objects that, or I guess, interpret objects that do not have a context entry as the context. The JSON LD context when passed into the API functions that I guess which API does it like compact and expand? Yeah.
Flatten. And flatten, that's all of them.
It's a second argument in all of them, is that right? Or is it?
Well, it's just a context parameter.
Okay.
Yeah, there's also more than one context parameter. So, you know, there's like a expand context option. It's whenever there's
right,
an option or parameter for a context.
Right. So interpret objects that do not have an add context entry as JSON-LD context when passed into the API functions. Let's see.
And then there's a further part of that, which is you can have the same behavior with an array.
Okay.
Well, can you? So if you have an array, are you saying that the array can be composed of objects that have context?
My implementations support both.
I see. So we need to say this in both directions, though. So it may have a context, but it also may not have a context, in which case it is treated as the context itself.
Yeah, that's right.
So what's the point of having an array which contains objects, which then in turn have, again, an add context key?
It's actually, you can imagine someone doing that unintentionally because of they're naive about the mean what they're supposed to do. So even though we don't have any examples of that, it's a reasonable error that someone might make. And if we can automatically recover from that, it seems like it's a reasonable thing to do. It might be worth some form of a warning callback if you detect that.
So is this proposal acceptable, or it might need to be reworded?
So the problem with this is this implies that the normal path is an object containing a context. And in this case, I think that is the exceptional case.
You mean the standard case now is you just pass in the object that is the context?
Correct. Or are you passing an array of objects, an array that may contain objects that are context?
Right. And I
so
agree
if you
with that.
If you had an array of a we had an object that and that object contained a context, then that would be something that I think we've agreed we will support. However, that should be an exception and perhaps should invoke a callback to.
Well, I think, like you said, it's
recoverable
not
error.
Necessarily an exception, and I don't know if it really it's deterministic, so we can figure out what they probably intended. And I don't know if we need to throw an error in that case.
I definitely don't think that we should throw an error because, as Marcus said, there's definitely a case where you might have already dereferenced a URL and you have the context and you just want to pass that in as the parameter. You don't want to have to.
Well, that is why we don't throw errors. We do callbacks, and it would be nice if there was some way to have a warning because I think in this is a case where I would like to see that this is like it's deprecated or a unusual use pattern.
Yeah, I could. I don't know that it's unusual. It doesn't seem incorrect or unusual to me for this specific case that Marcus was talking about.
We don't have. Do we have requirements for serializing contexts?
Yeah, it's a JSON-LD document. It has to contain that context. Otherwise, it's not a context.
Yeah.
I definitely buy Marcus's argument that it would be strange if you could pass in the URL to a document that it means this is the URL to a context document as a parameter, but you can't pass in the document itself. That seems odd to me. So I don't think that we should issue a warning in that case.
Yeah. All right. I take it back.
The possible problem with passing an array of objects which themselves contain the context key might be that someone has an invalid context document which contains that, and that if you just pick that out, it would work again. It seems like slightly problematic support. I mean, you can't use that shape anywhere unless you pass it in as an argument. And if you do that, you have programmatic access. Thus, you can create an array of objects from that if you have a list of context documents or something like that. So,
I'm not sure I followed the problem there.
Well, the problem is that the shape... I can't see any natural case for the shape of a list, an array of context documents.
So here's one use case, Nicholas. If they go out and cache or prefetch a bunch of URLs, and they then post-process any document, or actually pre-process any document to replace the URLs with the actual context documents, you could have a case where you have an array of URLs, or the original document was an array of URLs for the context, and then some kind of post-processing step will replace all of those URLs with the actual context document itself. And because it does that, those entries will actually have @context entries in there. So you'll have an array of objects with @context entries in there.
Yeah.
In that specific use case.
I can buy that. It's a good argument. Of course, it also implies that it should be okay to pass in a context with well everywhere you can expand a URL. Perhaps that by supporting this, we do support all those cases.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
we can test this without requiring API tests. We can simply put that in an expansion test now, because you can have a array with objects that contain context and that could also be interpreted in context. So I'll create such a test.
Okay, great. Thanks, Greg. Okay, so back to the proposal. Do we want to reword that proposal, or is that good enough?
Could we make it clear that remote contexts which are passed in by a URI So the remote document cannot have that shape, so that it must have that add context property.
We already say that, don't we? Isn't it a requirement? Remote context documents are required to have add context.
We say it in the spec, but here we kind of change the spec, so I just want to make it clear that we don't change it that way.
Okay.
Remote, we need to clarify.
Context documents specified via a URL are still required to contain an at context key to be a valid JSON LD context.
Yeah.
Result. Let's see. Looking down. Okay, so that should basically resolve the at context array feature. That's why that one wasn't closed. The government linked data feedback. I think we're done with that. Marcus, let me scroll to the bottom here, but.
Yeah, we are done. We still need to send that official response. We just sent them an informal list of changes and comments.
Yeah, and I think we can close this issue in this tracker because the RDF working group tracker is covering this issue as well. So the official responses will go out to all of the things that we have in the RDF working group tracker. So issue 254 can be closed at this point, as long as we have those three last things integrated into the spec. What was it? API 1S1 and 1S3.
It's everything in the API spec already, so we'll go ahead and close it.
Okay, great. I'm looking up at issue 274 now, which is Robin Bergeon's feedback. There really wasn't much we could do. Based on his feedback, I went through and did a really thorough response to him and updated the spec where I thought we could do so. So basically he said one of the examples was really misleading was confusing, so I updated the spec to make it a little clearer what was happening. Specifically, he was confused when we, in the context, we declared the first context that we declared in the document, in one of the first examples, we use a type at ID, and that was thoroughly confusing to him, which makes perfect sense because it is, confusing. It would have been less confusing if we used at IRI or at URL instead of at ID, but, that's a decision we made a long time ago. So I think we're done with Robin Bergeon's issue. I just wanted to make sure that other folks were aware of the discussion and didn't disagree that we were done with his issue. Yeah, again, I don't know how many of you have been able to review the discussion Rob and I have been having on his blog.
I read through the whole discussion, and that was fine. I mean, I can totally see his point of view since we more or less made the decision to try and limit the number of keywords we were using and reuse things and try and have some consistency there, but just looking at it without all that background, it does look strange.
Okay. Then I'll send a message out that we're closing issue 274. Give some time for people to read it and then close it. And the last remaining thing is briefly describing JSON-LD's data model at the beginning of the spec. This is the last major change I think that we need, or quote-unquote major. It's a major editorial change. I don't think it changes any of the content of the document. Pat Hayes looked through the spec again, and he said that it's really difficult to follow along because we start injecting things like blank node identifiers in introductory text at the beginning of the spec. Due to all of the changes that we've made for the RDF, some of the RDF alignment comments. So I think I'm going to sit down and make a pretty thorough editorial pass through and try to rearrange things, not remove RAD, you know, not remove text that we that David Booth and Peter Patel Schneider have put in there, but try and make it flow a bit better than it does now, because right now it's kind of a mess. And part of that editing will probably result in a paragraph outlining what the data model is for JSON-LD, and it will point to the detailed section at the end. But in general, it'll try and introduce the concepts at a high level at the beginning of the document, so that people know that we're working with a graph, and this is how we label nodes in the graph, and this is how we label edges in the graph, and things like that. I don't think there's much for us to discuss on this until that spec text has been written and it's in the spec. So if, unless there are comments on this, I think I'm just going to have to go in and make the changes and then get comments from all of you once the changes are in there. Any objection for proceeding in that way? Me just going in and trying to fix the flow of the document? All right. If there are no objections, I'll try doing that. And then that means that those are all of the issues that we have for the syntax spec that we're tracking in GitHub. Marcus, I think you've handled all of the issues for the API spec. Is that right?
Yeah, probably that context change we just made needs some adjustment in some text somewhere, but then all the other issues are handled, yeah.
Okay, great. All right, so that means that we're done with issues as far as we're tracking them, and we need to talk about the RDF working group issues that we're tracking there. These are formal comments that we've been tracking, and they require formal responses. I think we're ready to respond to all of them, so let's just kind of go through, go down the list. I'm looking at the URL that I just pasted in IRC, details on product JSON-LD last call too. We had Sandra's comments on XSD integer lossless conversion. I believe that we've put all the fixes and changes into the spec that we can. And I think he responded that he was happy with the changes that we've made. At least he hasn't said anything about not being happy with where the spec is right now. So I'll respond formally to them saying that we've updated that. So that's issue 129. Issue 130, properly referencing the DOM futures spec, I think we're still kind of floating out there with this. And it's something that we can't really there's something that we can't really address without W3C management understanding that this is the way that they're going to be referencing specs. So we did something in the RDFA working group. We referenced a spec in a particular way. But those specs were, I believe, both of those specs were W3C specs. Referencing the DOM futures spec is different because it's completely external to W3C. The only thing that we can do is we can reference it in the WG, and if that's not good enough for the W3C management, they're going to have to come back with some kind of approach that we could take, because we have to put the promises stuff in there, and we have to refer to it in some way. I mean, quite literally, the only reference to that spec is one word in the API spec. So I'm fairly confident that there's a solution to this, even if W3C management comes back and says that we're not allowed to reference the spec in the way that we're doing it right now.
So I think the official response is going to be, go ahead.
I think Sandra already outlined the process we should take. I just pasted the link in IRC.
Okay.
So he said we should probably go to CR and then wait there till someone else takes it up, for example, web apps. And if no one takes it up in a reasonable amount of time, we should more or less copy this spec and link to that one.
I don't quite agree with that, but yeah, we could do that. We'd continue to point to the DOM spec, the WG DOM spec, because it could change again, and pointing to an outdated version is not, I mean, the implementations are not going to do that. They're not going to use the outdated version. They're going to update to whatever whatever the current spec is. All right. Well, it doesn't prevent us from going to CR. I guess is the main point here, and we'll have to figure it out if it's if DOM 4 doesn't exist in W3C at that point, we'll have to figure something out. Next up is issue 132. JSON LD should be more closely aligned with RDF. We talked this to death. We believe that David Booth and Peter Patel Schneider are fine with the changes that we've made to the spec, and that they wouldn't stand in the way of the spec proceeding the CR at this stage. Issue 133 is next. JSON LD reverse properties. We have support for that in the spec, right? We put support for that in the spec, and that's that. It's there. So the response is that the response is that the feature's in there. And I forget, I think it's Nicholas, you raised this, right? No, David Rogers raised this. And Nicholas.
Yeah, it's the same issue at least, yes.
Okay. And then Soland also raised this. Okay, so those people should be happy since the feature's in the spec. Issue 134, JSON LD blank node properties and graph names. I think the graph names, blank node graph names are supported, and we have a way to do blank node properties. We've figured out a way to express or say that blank node properties can be used in a generalized RDF setting, but they are not standard RDF. And then issue 135, which is the government link data working group feedback, we've responded. The editors have responded, and now all we need is an official response from the group. So I think we can do that as well. Any objections? Does anyone object to all of these issues being resolved? I'm going to do a quick proposal because we do need to resolve this as a group. RDF work group, issue 129. Issue 129, 130, 132, 133, 134, and 135 have been addressed by the group and are resolved. And I'll send out official responses. Okay, so that proposal basically says that we have resolved all of these issues and that I will send out all the official responses. That's the result.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Do we still keep that featured risk marker in the spec?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should keep it in the off chance that we made a mistake, and we need to remove it after CR. That'll prevent us from going through another LC.
Okay, so the only one left, I think, is blank nose properties, and the other one you just added for list of lists, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, those issue markers. And those stay in, yeah, those stay in for the CR phase as well.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Next up is the CR prep. So I think we're ready to go to CR, which is great. We haven't been getting any other comments in that we need to address, which is usually a good sign that we're ready to go into CR as well. So I think the only thing that we need to do at this point is prep the documents for CR. So Marcus, if you could prep the API spec for CR, I can prep the JSON LD syntax spec for CR.
Sure.
I still need to do the editorial pass over the JSON LD document, so I'm hoping to do that this week, and hopefully we'll have a CR-ready document by next Tuesday ready to review. Marcus, do you think you can have a CR-ready API spec document by next Tuesday?
Yeah, can do that.
Okay. We'll review
by
that.
Sorry, by CR-ready, you mean a timestamped version using that template, or just the spec updated?
Timestamped version using the template. Let's do a timestamped version using the template, because we need to give a static copy for the RDF working group to look at. And then, we should have a diffmark version and all that kind of stuff. So.
Okay, and what date do we tag it with?
That's a good question. Let's see. 2013. I'm looking at the publication. So the 20th, we could do the 20th. That would give us enough time. So the 13th would be, yeah. Yeah, let's do the 20th. The 20th or the 22nd. The RDFA document goes out on the 22nd. That goes direct on the 22nd. So we might want to just do it on a different day than that. So the 20th or the 20, and I think they have a Geek Week on the last week, which means there's a publishing moratorium. So I think the 20th is the only reasonable date here.
And this will include the change, the reorganization you're doing, Manu, right?
Yes, that's right. Yep. Okay. Okay, so Marcus and I will prep the documents, the candidate rec documents for publication on August 20th. We will review these documents next Tuesday on the 13th. We're going to ask the RDF working group to publish them. So they need a heads up that we're going to pass something to them on the 14th of August and ask them to publish that.
Hang on a second. Is there an RDF working group meeting next week?
Go say that.
They're just biweekly during the summer.
Oh, crap. You're right.
Yeah. There's one tomorrow and then not again.
Wondering if we could get them to they won't vote on something without having this document in front of them. Okay, we're gonna have to push CR off then. Let me look at the publication moratoria for W3C.
Well, we could publish on the 22nd.
Well, that's I guess do they meet on the 20th?
They meet on the
21st.
I'm sorry, they meet on the 21st.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
So, I mean, if we get it out there, it's next week. It's on the agenda. The documents are there. They could always object, and then we wouldn't be able to do the 22nd. But
yeah, okay. So we'll need to do a bit of front running to tell the W3C publication team that we're getting ready to publish that, and that we're basically all we're doing is waiting on the RDF working group to approve it. Oh, okay, that's tight, but we could do it. August 22nd, then publication date, and let's give a heads up to the, I'll give a heads up to the W3C publication team, and we need to give a heads up to the RDF working group to let them know that that is when we intend to publish these documents. Okay. Is there anything else that we need to do for the CR prep?
I don't think so.
Buy party supplies.
We have a lot of things to party about. RDFA is going to REC, or HTML plus RDFA is going to REC, JSON-LD is going to CR. We've done a lot of good work over the past couple of years.
So what happens after CR?
After CR, we have to get together a report of implementations, and we already have enough implementations to pass the CR. You just need two interoperable implementations, and we already have that. And we do an implementation report, and people might comment during CR. We have to respond to those comments, and if everything looks good, we have interoperable implementations. We have... we've responded to everyone. Then we have a transition call with the W3C director. So it's probably going to be Ralph Swick or Tim Berners-Lee. It's rare that he joins, but sometimes he's on those calls. And then they approve it to go to proposed rec. And then we publish a proposed rec. And then once that's a proposed rec, there's about a month time where everyone is voting, all the W3C membership. Is asked to officially vote on the specification and pass it for recommendation. And if it passes, we get enough votes, then it goes out as an official W3C standard. So in the best case, we're looking at 3 months before JSON-LD is an official standard.
Okay.
Worst case,
so,
who knows?
What does it take to have like one of the? I know you already have the plenty of implementation for interop. What are the requirements there? I mean, as far as reporting, because we have a C sharp one. However, it is not. Basically, it's for internal.
That's fine. You can still run it against the test suite. If you run it against the test suite and it passes the test suite. You would send a report to us. You would send a report to the group saying what you pass and what you don't. It would be fantastic to have that report in there. So if you can do that.
In particular, you send in an URL report.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you can send in an URL report, and then we'll have, there are some instructions in the, I think in the test suite, page or in the sort of the provisional URL report that's there on how to do that, what the format should be, and then it'll appear in the report output.
Okay. And one last question: do we see any other changes, or like major changes, or even minor changes, really coming up, or are we? Is this pretty much it?
I hope not. I think this should be
not.
It. Yeah, because
okay,
if we make any changes at this point, we're going to have to backpedal and do another last call and go through this whole thing again.
Yeah, the reason I ask is with all the flux over the last month or so, we pretty much put on hold any updates to our implementation until things settled.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're going into another iteration, so we might be able to take that time to bring everything up completely to spec.
And the implementation report that you submit, you don't have to pass every single test, right? The only requirement is that there are at least two implementations for every test that pass, right? So if Greg's passes and Dave's passes and yours doesn't pass, we're still good. Right. It's not a bad thing. It's better to show more implementations than it is to show, you know, all green across the board for everything.
But it's good
to do that.
Technically, what we need to do in the CR period is finish the test suite, and there may be more tests that we decide to do.
Mm-hmm.
And at least what's happened with Bill is that means then publishing test suite in the W3C namespace someplace. We don't necessarily have to do that. That's what they did. And issuing a call for implementations, which to date Turtle has not done, which is sort of crazy. But presumably we will also need to issue a call for informations when the test suite is complete. And of course, we're more inclined to have a living test suite similar to RDFAs versus something that's completely frozen. But that's probably something that should be discussed as part of the CR transition.
Are you saying discuss it now or discuss it during CR?
Yeah.
Well, two questions. Are we discussing it now or are we discussing it during the CR period? Are you saying yeah to both?
No time like the present. I guess I put that out there. I suggest that we just keep the test suite where it is and that we update the test suite as necessary post-recommendation even.
Yep.
Similar to to address issues that are coming up similar to the way that RDFA is having small updates made to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, I don't think we should...
Particularly given that JSON itself is still undergoing standardization, there may be some changes that we want to make to track that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the other thing is that, freezing a test suite, you can already freeze it, right? We've got Git commits. We've got Git hashes that are effectively timestamps of the test suite at certain periods in time. So we can always refer, we can always tag the website with this is what the state of the test suite was during the CR, when we exited CR. And people can always go back to that.
So when we call for implementations, the test URL that will be tested against, should that be the frozen, a frozen, or a tag?
Yeah, we could do that. We
or
could
a commit.
Say, it would be. Let's say it's a tag, and we just say, if you want to test against the test suite at a particular time, or if you want to use the test suite that was used for CR, here's the Git tag that was used, and we could even include the commit hash, and that's all we have to do, right? I mean, that's it at a static version in time. We could go further and put put something like CR-test-suite and duplicate everything, but I don't really see the purpose in doing that. I think the W3C is a bit behind the times when it comes to testing, right? You always want a modern test suite, and so I think we've done the right thing with the RDFA test suite, meaning that whenever we find a problem, whenever we find where two implementations deviate, we put in a bunch of tests to ensure that they don't deviate anymore. And that's kind of vital. I think that's really important for interoperability is to keep the test suite up to date and kind of living. The same argument goes for specs too, right? Which is the whole purpose behind what WG. I think we can have both easily. We can have the static version by just saying here's the git commit hash and here's the tag. If you wanted to test against the version that everyone else tested against during CR, use that. If you want to test against the live test suite that's always up to date, here's the URL for that test suite. Are there any objections for that approach?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, I'll do a quick proposal in here. The JSON-LD test suite will be a living test suite, updated as needed. The version of the test suite when we transition into
And this is for clarifying ambiguities in reading the spec, right? It's
That's the purpose of the test suite?
Yeah, and the livingness of it.
Yes.
But,
yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so proposal, the JSON-LD test suite will be a living test suite, updated as needed. The version of the test suite when we transition into candidate recommendation will be assigned a Git tag so that others can test against a static version of the test suite if required.
And report against.
Yes, I will update that. Kenny test and report against a static version of the test suite. Okay, there we go. Oops. Let me do that as resolved. Okay. All right. We're in good shape. Great job, everyone. This is good news. So hopefully no one else will throw a bombshell into this group or the other group, and we'll be in CR at the end of this month. Anything else that we need to discuss?
Do we need to define some exit criteria for CR before entering it?
We do, and I think it's going to be the fairly standard exit criteria, two interoperable implementations and a report. So set the bar low. I think we're going to go way above the bar, but let's just do the minimum that's required by W3C. Or to put it another way, I've never seen anybody else move the bar any higher than that, than what's required.
But I'm not sure, do we need to include that in the spec directly, or is that a separate document? Or
we put it in the, we mention it in the status of the document section, and it's really the area director is in charge of that. But what ends up happening typically, and I guess that would be Thomas Roessler, who's actually leaving W3C to go to Google. So I don't know who the new area director is going to be. And really, to make their lives easier, the editors of the spec just update the status of the document section, and then they give it to the area director to proofread. So, so basically, Marcus, you and I would say that the exit criteria for a candidate recommendation is two interoperable implementations and a implementation report. So we just say that in the status of the document section, and I can write that text if you'd prefer. Marcus, what you could do is you could go and look at the any other candidate rec document. It should say roughly the same thing.
Okay.
Basically, all you have to do is, like, it's a sentence, exit criteria for candidate recommendation are two interoperable implementations and an implementation report.
Okay.
And that's it.
And I think the only other thing we need to discuss is how long CR will last, or don't we need to put a date in
the document?
Yeah,
we do. Four weeks, I think, is what we had decided a long time ago. I don't know if anything has really changed. We wanted to get through CR quickly, and I think 4 weeks is the requirement. Actually, technically, I think it's 3 weeks, but let's just do an even month. Unless there are any objections, does anyone else feel that we should be longer than 4 weeks?
I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah, especially since we already have implementations. Okay, but really, when we proof the document next Tuesday, we will do a bunch of proposals to say when the CR period should begin, when it should end, what the status of the document should say, all that kind of stuff. Okay. Anything else?
I do have one question just about URL in general. Is URL just the format? I mean, the tool, the actual test tool, whatever, is not as important as just using the same test data?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think, Dave Longley, do you have something that generates URL from the... It's a fairly simple format.
Yeah, the test
like a runner that's in jsonld.js and then piled and in our PHP implementation. They all just output some jsonld version of Earl, I believe. I think that's all that happens. It's just like constructing some JSON objects that all keep, and then you stuff all the test results in a big array. That's all it. Right.
Do we have an example for Paul that would help him out?
Yeah, I'm looking at the stuff online that was linked as far as like the existing stuff, and I also looked at looking at the W3C stuff. Honestly,
it should be
really
JSON
the only part we've. Yeah, I've looked there. We've got the expansion. We haven't done a lot with compaction since mainly we're just producing more so. So not really. We really don't care so much about compaction at this point. So okay, I'll see what we can do. I'll have to run it through our legal department.
Sure. And yeah, and just let us know if there's anything we can do to help out or any questions we can answer.
Okay.
There are a couple of.
So I pasted in a. Yeah. So the one is a Earl report that was run a bit ago, and it shows some turtle format for the test submission. But as Dave pointed out, it could be JSONLD or anything else. But what people have done in some cases have pretty much just copied it and pasted this stuff and put it in their template and just output passed or failed and. Timestamps appropriate, obviously, and reference their own test subject.
Okay.
And then a small test subject description, which is what allows it to show up in the summary section.
All right. So I'll see what we can do. I mean, if we have some time, we'll do it. But right now, we're horribly under the gun. So.
Sure. Yeah, we'd appreciate it if you could get an implementation in, but if you can't, I totally understand.
All right.
Okay. Anything else before we go? All right. Thanks everyone for the call. Marcus and I will prep the CR documents for for review next Tuesday, and then hopefully we'll get the RDF working group to approve the transition to CR. Have a great week, and we'll chat again next Tuesday. Bye.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.